I would like to open the phone lines now, and I will answer as many questions as I can, and I will go, oh, I'm willing to go as long as 8 o'clock tonight, James. Can we run that long?
I'm with you. If, as long as people want to ask questions, I'm here.
Well, you sent me a whole book of them, so I got a lot of questions to answer.
That's right. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to unlock the phone lines in a moment, and all you need to do in order to ask a question is press any button on your phone pad, and that will unmute your line. You can ask your question. So I've unmuted your line, and fire away.
Would anybody like to ask a question?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hi, I'd like to ask Paul a quick question.
This is Paul. Who are you?
Paul, it's Mike. Mike Keenan. I met you years ago when you did a conference in New York City on Eat, Move, and Be Healthy.
Cool. How can I help you, Mike?
Well, I'm a personal trainer. I do a lot of nutrition counseling, and I want to know how this program would work into my business of personal training and nutrition. How would you feel I would integrate this program with my clients?
The first thing you'd have to do is do it on yourself.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just going to be a bunch of ideas rattling around in your head, and it might sound really cool when you're talking to people, but we can only transfer mastery to other people at the level that we embody it ourselves. So my suggestion would be, whether you have an addiction, an eating disorder, or a disease, not, you should do the program. There will be tremendous growth and development in there for you, and by going through the process, will be much more capable of identifying exactly where your clients are stuck. Because once you look inside and see where you're stuck, it gives you on-the-job training for seeing similar patterns and problems in other people. And the 1-2-3-4 program is literally built around the nodal points or the common areas of energetic disruption, disharmony, and chaos and lives. So once you've been through it yourself, it's a no-brainer from there. Just like once you learn how to eat right for your metabolic type and shop for organic food,
absolutely,
you don't have to walk around worried if your clients are going to ask you a tough question you can't answer. You just take them to the store, show them how to shop, take them to your house, show them how you cook and eat. It's a done deal. No anxiety, no worry, no fear, no fatigue. If you're doing the job right, and they start arguing with you, you can do what I do, and that's take off my clothes and say, look, this is my program. This is what you hired me for. Let's see you.
Well, I drive around your CDs in my car, so my kids hear it all the time.
Right on. So you understand what I'm saying then?
Yeah, I just wanted to see, I guess my question was really is, if this is a new movement for me, a new thought process, and introducing it to my clients without, you know, you come on being, like you said, become very ambitious about this, but I want to make sure that I'd be introducing it correctly to my clients as opposed to just, I guess I have to go through the program myself is really what you're saying before I really can understand it.
So always remember this Paulcheck rule. First and foremost, you want to find out what it is that your client wants.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what your client wants, you have no idea how to sell them what they need, do you?
No, that's true.
So this program, first and foremost, is identifying what it is that the addicted, eating disordered, and diseased really want but don't know how to get. And to the degree that you're able to go through the workbook and see the logic and the rationale and apply it to your own life, it's second nature as to how to help other people through it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have much more advanced training for people like yourself that once they go through the program or training. But this isn't designed to be a course of training like to be an instructor for the Czech Institute.
Right.
This is a self program, but I'm sure your intelligence is such that the applications of it will be obvious, just like the application of a Swiss ball is obvious once you learn how to use one.
So this is almost like a course that would be like a precursor, I guess, to the holistic practitioner curriculum?
It's not a precursor, but it teaches you many of the same things because they cannot be extracted from a holistic approach to any kind of function.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you. Would anyone else like to ask a question?
Hello, Paul?
Yes.
Hi, this is Ohad from Israel. How are you?
How do you say your first name?
Ohad. I'm from Tel Aviv, Israel.
All right. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm happy as a clam and busy as a beaver, but I'm happy to ask your question.
Good. I wanted to know, I figure out that many of my clients who come for more holistic type of exercise or treatment, actually they think it sounds cool and it's modern, but they see it again as a kind of pill, you know, as something specific that can help them, and they don't really implement it as a way of life as I see it. So how do you approach this kind of people?
Well, that's basically what I was just saying to Mike. The first thing you got to do is find something that they love enough to change. So if you find a golfer, you know, the golfer loves to hit the ball straight and long, right?
Yes.
So even if you find a golfer who's maybe got an addiction to caffeine or cigarettes or whatever, if you try to go at that human being and say, look, we need to get you in shape, you're fat, or you should quit smoking them cigarettes, they're going to give you lung cancer, not going to be very interested. Because the reality of it is, Ohad, most people's addictions are the safest form of love they've ever been able to find in their life. You see, you can spend a whole night with a bottle of whiskey, never ask any favors of you, send you email, it doesn't call you up, it doesn't explain whether the sex was good enough. Addictions are safe love. So what we've got to do is find a love of equal or greater magnitude that we can use to compete with the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Always anchor an individual in what it is that they love enough to rise up to and to prepare themselves for. The golfer loves to hit the ball, so always remember the rule. Tell them what they want to hear, but give them what they need. So the approach to the fat, addicted, cigarette-smoking golfer is not one in which you ever mention anything about cigarettes or obesity. Everything that you're going to do, from cardiovascular exercise to strength training to diet changes, is all to be pivotal in this golf game. We don't talk about anything else because there's blind spots in these people's minds. Nothing exists outside of golf for them. Some people want to see their kids grow up and have babies. So everything's all about being there to be able to play with your grandchildren when you're in your 60s. Some people come to me because they want to be able to shift gears faster in their race car. Some people want to jump higher. People want to run faster. Some people want to make better love. A lot of young men these days are telling me they need help because they can't keep it up or get it up. And they're in their 20s, for God's sake. So I don't go after their addiction. What I do is if I find an addiction or an eating disorder or a disease process that's getting in the way of optimal sexual performance, I just make it clear to them that they've got a choice to make. You know, be Tarzan in bed or be addicted to something that's killing Tarzan.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Yeah, is it you that videos on the YouTube channel there?
Yeah, yeah, it's me, sure.
Right on. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. I appreciate your work. It's excellent. It's life-inspiring.
Good. Well, I do my best to help people find a way without pushing them or beating on them.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Well, have a lovely rest of your day, and thanks for participating on my YouTube channel and being such a great example for other people, Ohad.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jackie Blake from New York City.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I have kind of a challenging one, but I know that you like that. There was actually an Oprah segment a while back where she was talking about heroin-addicted pregnant women, and these women had gone to their doctors, and a few of their doctors said that it actually could be more dangerous for their fetus for them to detox from heroin while pregnant, and told them to keep doing heroin until the baby was born. So I wanted to ask your thoughts on that, number one. Number two, what if we have a pregnant client that is addicted to caffeine or sugar? Is it hazardous for a pregnant woman to detox from caffeine, sugar, and stuff like that while they're pregnant?
Well, I'll give you my opinion. I have not worked with too many heroin-addicted people, only a few. The reason the doctor says things like that, because certain drugs, particularly the drugs that are called class 1 drugs, which, by the way, you might find this interesting. Did you know that sugar, the same class of drugs as heroin? White table sugar is a class 1 drug. You can read about that in the book Molecules of Emotion by Candace Pert, who is a famous biochemist who used to design drugs and work for the National Institute of Health in their research department. Now, why they will say that, I'll give you a classic example from my own life history. My brother was addicted to heroin for quite some time, and oftentimes he was part of a motorcycle gang called the Hells Angels. And he would get thrown in jail, and in jail he'd be forced to have to dry out. And every now and then they'd let him make a phone call, and when he would call me, he would be in tears, and he would literally tell me, Paul, it feels like my body is being torn apart from the inside out. Every single part of me is in pain. I can't sleep. I can't find a position of comfort. He says, I'm in so much pain, I literally want to just beat my head against the wall till I knock myself unconscious. So when people get addicted to class 1 drugs, such as heroin, morphine, these types of hard drugs, sugar, the withdrawal process can be so traumatic that in a fetus, the fetus could literally damn itself in the womb going through the withdrawals.
Okay.
So the other problem is that the biochemistry can be changed by any drugs. If you have a fetus going through critical developmental stages and it's adapting or has adapted to the drug, and then you take it away, it can cause such a negative effect on the growth and development sequence that the physician may actually see it as more detrimental to take the drug away than to continue the drug. My opinion on that is that it's going to be an individual physician by physician judgment call, and a lot of that would depend on what stage of development the fetus is in.
Okay.
When you're dealing with women, and all you got to do to see this is go to Starbucks. It blows my mind whenever I am walking through airports or shopping malls or bookstores. I see pregnant women sitting there drinking massive doses of caffeine and sugar like it's nothing, and they don't realize they're going to give birth to an addict. I've had numerous cases where women approach me, said, why is it that my baby won't stop crying unless I put Coca-Cola in its bottle? And I asked the key question, were you drinking Coca-Cola while you were pregnant? And every single time the answer was yes. I said, well, you gave birth to an addict. Congratulations. I mean, you know, I can't believe you would drink Coca-Cola while you were pregnant. There's 12 teaspoons of sugar in one can of the stuff, and it's loaded with toxic chemicals and garbage, and most soda pops are. So literally, women bring anything into their body that's addictive or disruptive to their own physiology, it's far more addictive and disruptive to a tiny little infant. And the doses people drink and consume are those that are typical of an addict. Watched a woman get a triple shot caramel latte, and she was about 8 months pregnant. And it was everything I could do to just bite my tongue and not go over there and give her a full-blown lesson on human anatomy and physiology. But that's not my style. That's proselytizing, and I'm not going to proselytize. But the principles that I share in this program work very effectively for anyone who's pregnant and has an addiction to anything. Unless, of course, it was a situation he described with a hard drug, a physician would need to be an intermediary so that there weren't problems created by trying to get healthy.
Okay. But stuff like if a woman is just addicted to caffeine or sugar, a pregnant person could use your program and effectively come off of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, there's going to be withdrawal and there's going to be all the symptoms, but there are methods for naturally managing withdrawal, but if a person doesn't do the work that I've laid out here, they're never going to stay free of an addiction. Does that answer it for you?
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Would anyone else like to ask a question?
Hello, Paul.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Carl from Philadelphia.
Carl from Philadelphia, that's easy to remember.
I was wondering, how would you like to see your community that is practicing what you're teaching, how would you like to see that community form? I mean, what would you like to see the relationships between practitioners and students be?
Well, for all Czech practitioners, I encourage them to live the principles that I teach and that are the principles taught to them in all Czech training. My philosophy is that you can't teach, you don't live. You can only talk about it. But look what's happened when people start talking about God. All it's done is create war, death, and destruction, yet same people that are talking all about God are the ones pointing the missiles at everybody. So, in my opinion, first way to form community is to get enough like-minded people that are willing to actually live the principles of whatever group is forming. For example, you get lots of community at a 12-step program because there you've got a group of people that have made the decision be in the same place at the same time and subscribe to the 12 steps. So anybody that's on a 12-step program automatically has kinship with anyone else on a 12-step program because they automatically have a bonding force between them. So what I've done for the Czech practitioners is created a Czech forum where they can all talk to each other through an internet forum. I also have a website where any of them can access the contact details of the other ones and have private conversations with them. And we're just running our first Czech conference in England to bring all as many Czech practitioners into one room to have community bonding as possible. So the key thing to create tribe is to get enough people together to have a sense of tribe. And once those people get together, then typically somebody becomes a leader and initiates a scheduled event. In other words, you get together once a month or whatever, once every 2 weeks. But right now, there's approaching 10,000 people that have gone through one or more of my certification programs. And it's gotten to the point now where my name is becoming known worldwide in medical and exercise circles, which means we are successfully creating tribe or community. And so my efforts with the PS Success Master Program and my YouTube accounts and Facebook, things like that, which my son manages, are to give people as much leadership as I can without them having to spend a lot of money and get them to the point where they're confident enough in my teachings and in my own reality to be willing to spend money on a book like How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, which can take you a million times deeper than a 10-minute YouTube clip can. That's how I create tribes.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because, I mean, not specifically with your system or people's practice. I mean, I'm fairly recently come to learn about what you teach, and I haven't taken any of your courses. But some other things I've studied before, which I thought was valid, I've found that the students would often find a way to kind of create a community that was a false community, and they would kind of support each other in ways that weren't valid, whether it be yoga or other practices. And I just wondered if you put it, you put any safeguards in effect to kind of prevent that from happening.
So your phone's kind of breaking up. Are you saying that some of the communities that get together actually dilute or nature the training?
Well, they acknowledge each other, I find, when they really haven't developed the skills yet to be true masters or skilled practitioners. But in order that, you know, for example, I'll acknowledge you, you acknowledge me, and, you know, that way we can create this almost like a false community.
Right.
And I wonder if you put just safeguards in place to prevent that.
Well, you see, this is a very tricky issue here, because what you're calling safeguards are often perceived as mechanisms of control by the undeveloped ego, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're walking on a razor's edge here. The issue is to create leadership out of empathy and compassion and love, not out of control. And the problem is that most of the people that start groups do them for the wrong reasons. And one of the pathologies that we suffer from worldwide is that it's far easier to masquerade as a master or a teacher, because everybody assumes that you have already done the work that you're putting them through. But as you know, when you can get a personal trainer certification on the internet, can become certified in all sorts of things at a weekend workshop that doesn't teach you anything, and all of a sudden you're walking around telling everybody else what to do, but you still have a Budweiser tumor, you can't get it up, use the toilet, then you have is, again, a sick ego that's addicted to attention, uses the art of manipulation or deception, and that's a classic demonstration of sex and violence loving. What I said in the very beginning of the call about the native tribal societies is actually, in my opinion, of false tribe. You see, we used to have a very carefully designed system in tribal societies, and by the way, it used to be matriarchal until 4,000 years ago, so the women used to run the tribal governments. And in those societies, the chief was always the person who was the one most qualified by experience and by proof to be able to place the tribe's chance of growth and survival. But now what we have is essentially groups of idiots that just regurgitate more garbage to each other. But the good news is even though that looks very dysfunctional on the surface, they're learning how to love each other by looking at each other. And one of the laws of the universe is like attracts like. So this is where the saying misery loves company comes from. And so what you'll see is that these false tribes will set themselves up in a staircase-like fashion. Somebody might begin in a bogus weight loss group or a bogus 12-step program, but as soon as they find out that it doesn't work, inevitably they start looking and they run into somebody who's been in one that did work. So you'll see that as people grow and develop and mature, they will resonate to higher and higher levels, and they will ultimately find themselves at the destination that their intention was to arrive at anyhow.
Thank you.
Does that answer it adequately for you, Paul?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. Does anyone have a question?
Hello, Paul.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Tyler. I'm from Washington State. I'm a pretty big fan of yours. Recently, I started seeing your YouTube videos, and I'm learning a lot. And
good.
I have a quick question for you. I'd like to know what it would take to actually slow down my metabolism, because I believe I have a ectomorphic body type, and no matter what I do, it seems like I can't gain the weight that I want to gain muscle mass, and I want to gain about 75 to 80 pounds in the course of my lifetime, and I was wondering if you have any suggestions for me.
Well, yeah, just eat more food than you can burn off and make sure you're doing enough exercise to convert that into muscle. Usually, people that have that kind of condition either are not eating correctly or they're not resting enough and or their exercise programs are not scientifically designed adequately to create an anabolic response in a body like that. Those body types are harder to put muscle mass on, but I've never had a single case where I couldn't put plenty of muscle on somebody. The other thing is, if you have a parasite infection, you can eat till the cows come home and lift weights until the cows come home, and it won't add mass to you.
Yes, I actually believe I could have one. I actually went to the doctor, but for some reason they gave me a blood test, which had nothing, I didn't believe it had nothing to do with it. So, I don't know.
There are blood tests for parasites, but it should have been very evident what the blood test was for.
It's for glucose fasting, a CBC with differential, and there was another one. They took those tests to see if I could have had another problem causing weight loss, because I reported I had 20 pounds of weight loss in the past 9 months.
Yeah, well, that's an indicator of disease. That's why they did the tests on you. They wanted to see if there was problems with enzymes, nutrient levels, and, you know, key biological markers. And just so you know, most physicians know almost nothing about parasites. So unless you go to a parasitologist, I'll give you a true story just to show you how little they know about parasites. I had a patient who had an 18-inch Ascaris worm come out of her backside. She scooped it up out of the toilet, put it into a glass jar, and took it to Kaiser Permanente's hospital, to their laboratory, and said, "I want you to find out what kind of a parasite this is." They called her a couple weeks later to give her the results. Guess what the results were?
Yeah, pretty bad.
No parasite detected. She said, "What the hell do you mean? I brought you the damn parasite." Right? They were so far off the mark that they didn't even realize that that was the parasite. So she did it again. 2 weeks later, no parasites detected. Finally, she called me, and I had to send her to a doctor that actually understands what a parasite is and is connected to a laboratory that assesses for parasites. So the medical system at large is not a good place to deal with parasites. You need to find a medical doctor that deals specifically with those problems. If you go to drkalish.com, K-A-L-I-S-H, somebody that can help you.
And as far as the whole eating thing goes, if I don't have a tapeworm, you just use, is there any way of recommendation how many calories you recommend I take in? Because they have a lot of calculators out there, but I don't know which one.
I don't work on that system, and this kind of an issue is not something I can even approach on the telephone. Like, I have to do about a 4-hour assessment on anybody before I'll even begin to design an exercise program for them. And the number of factors that I have to consider in order to design an intelligent exercise program are significant. If you saw the way I design exercise programs, you'd see that what most people are doing with exercise is really just equivalent to group torture.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I'll look into that website.
Yeah. You can also look for a Czech practitioner in your area. Where are you from?
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah. You'll find somebody that I've
seen.
Just go on, just contact the Czech Institute or go on our website and look in the section where it says find a practitioner near you. And anybody that's a holistic lifestyle coach level 2 or a Czech practitioner level 1 or higher. You want someone that's an HLC 2, Czech practitioner level 1 or higher, and they'll straighten you out.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'll look into that. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to ask a question?
Did I call?
Hello.
Sorry, I'm calling from Sydney, Australia.
I can tell by that accent.
Yes, sorry about that.
What's your name?
My name's Jeremy.
Jeremy, how can I help you?
I've got a personal question. I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis about a year ago.
Yeah.
And I've been trying very hard, doing a lot of the things that you suggest through a number of your books, to basically get myself to a position where I can come off the drugs. My doctors have recommended, essentially they've told me that I'll be on drugs for the rest of my life, which I'm not too happy about. And I'm just wondering what your suggestion would be to move that forward.
I would, if you're in Sydney, I would look up Donald Carr, D-O-N-A-L-L-C-A-R-R, and you can track him down through our website. If you can't find it on the website, then just contact the Institute, one of our instructors. He's somebody who has the training to help you. But, again, like the last guy, I'd have to ask you such a long list of questions and know so much about what you are doing. For example, lots of people tell me they've been off of gluten, but when I look at their diet log, they're eating tons of it.
Hey, that's fine. Look, you've done enough. A name is absolutely perfect, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, Donald R., and he'll straighten you right out.
Great work. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to ask a question?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Paul. It's Adam from South Wales.
Hey, Adam. How are you, bud?
Yeah, fine, fantastic. Firstly, that point you mentioned about AkersUSA.com, that was unbelievable. That was quite mind-blowing. Is that really true about the cancer cure they found?
Absolutely. Get the documentary and watch it. It'll blow your mind.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Anyway, my question was, you mentioned something in your speech about how some guys can, with addiction such as smoking, can live to extraordinary ages, that, you know, you shouldn't think they could live to that age if they smoked 30-40 a day. Do you think the body is that adaptable, and do you think people can have certain factors in their life that can offset certain addictions like smoking?
Absolutely. For example, if you've got a diet of predominantly organic food and free-range animals, and you're going to have a constant stream of nutrition to counterbalance what's being extracted out of your body through the smoking or the addiction. So this is why I built this program the way I did, because you cannot survive an addiction unless you tune yourself to the four doctors. So all you got to do is think of it as simply as this: energy in versus energy out. But whenever you bring energy into the human body, if it's not in a form that can be transferred immediately into energy that you can use to run your body, then it has to go through a process of conversion. For example, if you eat an ear of corn, you've got to masticate that, you've got to digest it, you've got to assimilate it, metabolize it, and eliminate it. You look at my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, you'll find out that 55 to 70% all the calories your body uses on a daily basis are used just to process the food and run the body. So if you're into a habit, whether it be drinking, smoking, or drugs, that's consuming more of your sources than your body is bringing in based on what it takes to keep you alive and process the addiction, then you're just accelerating the rate at which you get to meet God firsthand. And if your lifestyle is supportive to your addiction, then you can enjoy the addiction for as long as you can support it.
Wow. Interesting.
You see, it's, in my philosophy, it's not an addiction if you're enjoying yourself and you don't think you have a problem. So if you smoke cigarettes and you love it and you have no interest in stopping, then you don't have an addiction. Somebody else might think you do, but to the degree that the addiction works for your lifestyle and gives you mental, emotional, spiritual, or physical nutrition in the form of joy, gratification, relaxation, it can actually be far more harmful to stop such addictions if it causes tremendous stress for the individual than it is to keep them going. So in many cases, I've had addicted people, and I don't try to get them off their addiction. I find out what they want to do. I'll give you a case history. I had a lady come to me a few years ago whose big interest was dancing. She loved to go out club dancing on the weekends, and she liked to do drugs like ecstasy and drink and just party all weekend. And she came to me scared to death. I was going to tell her she couldn't do that. And she got a big shock. I said, no, if that's what you love to do, I want to help you do it better. So I didn't tell her what my plan was, but I knew for sure as soon as she started resting, exercising properly, and eating the way I was going to teach her, the effects of the drugs on her were going to be so strong, the first thing she was going to have to do is cut the dose down. Second thing that was going to happen is that as the body gets healthier and healthier, the symptoms of the side effects get stronger and stronger. For example, if you let some healthy individual who's never smoked a cigarette take a drag on a cigarette and breathe it in, they might vomit all over you. But if you give a cigarette to someone that smokes them all the time, their body is so suppressed that it doesn't even know there's a problem anymore. That's because the immune system is that shut down. So when people get healthier, they get to be more and more like people that don't have addictions, and their body reacts more strongly to every kind of drug, including recreational drugs. So sure enough, in 6 months, this lady I'm telling you about had to give up on clubbing because she said she enjoyed feeling good more than she enjoyed feeling shit-faced dancing all night. So I didn't tell her what I was up to, and I knew I'd get her there. So if I would have told her she had to quit drinking and doing drugs, she probably would have been so stressed and found my program so challenging because she would have been losing what she considered to be her love. So instead of taking her love away, I nourished her love, and that gave her the power to overcome her own addiction.
Fantastic. Yeah, great point. It's like when you haven't had a coffee for a couple of months, then you suddenly have one, and then you're flying through the clouds, you know, when you usually wouldn't be if you have one every day. Yeah, I totally understand.
Thank you.
Thank you for your help. Thank you.
You're welcome. Would anyone else like to ask a question?
Paul, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
I'm good. This is Scott from Seattle. And my question is, I'm proudly certified through the Institute as HLC2, and I did that to better understand some of my own pretty serious health issues that I'm working to get a handle on. And my question is how far healed should I be, in your opinion, before I start my own practice? Because, I mean, I'm well educated now and I understand these principles, but at the same time, you know, I'm probably 6 months to a year away of really being optimal, so to speak, you know, and just want your opinion on when's a good time to start representing the knowledge I have and trying to build a practice.
Right now.
Okay.
You're always healthier than somebody, and you're probably healthier than most people just because you spent the amount of time in there to learn about it and start practicing it. So if you were to walk out on the street and compare the average citizen's health to your own, you'd probably find yourself above average, wouldn't you?
Well, maybe. My knowledge is definitely above average, but like I said, I still feel like I'm in the trenches a little bit. You know, I'm trying to get the weight back off and all that kind of stuff. So I definitely feel insecure about just not necessarily looking like I know more than the average person, because in a lot of ways I look just like them.
Well, then you should use that in your favor. And whenever you get a new client, you tell them, hey, look, this isn't a walk in the park. There's lots of challenges. Our whole society is sick tired, overweight, out of shape, and addicted. And I want you to know right up front that I'm not a dictator. I'm down in the trenches with you. Want to do this with me, I'm all for it. Let's rock and roll. I'll do my best to help you, but I want you to know in this game with you.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I appreciate that. Thank you, Paul.
Did Buddha ever stop being a Buddhist?
No, he did not.
Right? Did Jesus ever stop being a Christian?
Nope, he did not.
Well, there you go. So go be a Buddha.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Would anyone else like to ask me a question?
Paul, is there anything else that we should prepare ourselves before we start the 1, 2, 3, 4 Overcoming Addiction, Obesity, and Disease programs, or any other your programs we need to do first?
No, it comes with the e-book, The Last Four Doctors You'll Ever Need. I would recommend to all people, when you purchase the program, start by reading and watching all the videos and slideshows that go with that book, because that's the foundation material that you need to have in place in order to really capitalize on all the rest of it. Because remember, anybody that's going to do a program like this is interested in change. Change always takes more energy than repeating an old behavior, even when the old behavior is self-defeating. And the reason is in the nervous system, every time we repeat a behavior like having coffee at breakfast or having a cigarette at every coffee break, even though those behaviors may be robbing us of energy and life force and nutrition, in the nervous system, they're actually easier to execute because they're already well established. So the analogy I give my patients is, if you were a sheep out in the wild and you were thirsty for water and you could smell water coming from the northeast and you saw a trail heading in the direction that you smelled the water, would you walk down the trail or would you just go through the woods and force your way through and make a new trail? Well, anybody knows if they saw a trail heading in the direction they wanted to go, they wouldn't bushwhack. They'd follow the trail as long as it served them. Well, when we develop habit patterns for good, bad, or otherwise in the nervous system, our neurological energy and our hormonal energy always flows through the path of least resistance. So in order to change any behavior, you've got to bring enough energy on board to be able to mount the change. In other words, to drive the energy through a new pathway. This is why in exercise, for example, it's far easier for me to teach some housewife that's never worked out in her life how to exercise because she doesn't have any bad habits. If you get somebody that's been in the gym lifting weights for a few years with bad form, they're a disaster because no matter how many times you tell them how to do it right, their nervous system keeps wanting to do it wrong. In the Army, when I was a soldier in the 82nd Airborne Division, the drill sergeant said that they preferred teaching women how to shoot because women don't grow up on farms acting like John Wayne. And lo and behold, we got a shocking piece of news one day when we found out the platoon of females that had just left the shooting range had a far higher average score on the shooting range than our platoon did of all males. And the reason is exactly that. We had a platoon full of farm boys that thought they were John Wayne, and the women had no experience, so when they taught them right first time, there was no competing behaviors or neurological pathways. So it's very, very important to follow the principles of the four doctors because that's where you get enough energy to mount the flow of new change. Is that clear?
Absolutely.
That's my advice, but that's part of the program, so there's nothing you need to do before then except just be interested and willing. Would anyone else like to ask a question?
Hi, Paul. This is Peter Cannon in Seattle. How are you?
Is it Peter?
Peter Cannon, yes, in Seattle. How are you?
Peter? How can I help you?
Oh, well, I have done the practice of meditating with the
circular.
Tai Chi ruler?
Yeah, I made it, 200 days straight, and I was wondering, do I still need to use the stick, the ruler, in the container, or can I just do the movements without it? I'm kind of looking to change it up a little bit. What suggestions do you have for that?
Oh, you can do anything you want to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you don't have to, when you do a gong, commitment to, doing enough work to actually find out what any given technique offers you. So if you're ready to move on to something else, the most important thing is that you've loved yourself enough to commit time taking care of yourself. So find anything else that nourishes you like that and do it until you're done with it, and then move on to the next thing. I've been practicing these things for years. I got a whole arsenal of them. As a matter of fact, if you're interested, you can get a hold of the companions for Dr. Quiet on the website, TPS site. You can buy the audio companion for Dr. Quiet, and I teach 7 other act meditation techniques you might find interesting and easy to do.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, excellent. Okay.
Hey.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Be well.
You too, bud.
Thank you.
Would anybody else like to ask a question? Okay, well, if no one else has a question, I'll spend a few minutes working on these email questions here. The first one's from Justin. How much of an addiction is in the alcoholic's control to change? What common threads do you see in all addicts that overcome addiction? Is overcoming an addiction just sheer willpower or desire? Start with the first one. How much of an addiction is in the addict's control to change? Well, it's any addiction is in the addict's control to change, and if it's not in the addict's control, as I've alluded to several times on the program today, you're never going to change for good, because almost all addictions are attempts at self-love. You'll find a very common thread running through addicted people, and that is in families, disruptive families, and sex and violence love from parents and siblings. And so what an addiction is an attempt to get loved out being tortured. So we start off innocuously, like having a cigarette with a buddy to try to fit in, which is a form of getting loved, and the next thing you know, we're addicted. But then maybe you grow to love yourself, and now you've got a chemical addiction. Well, then you just need to find something that you love enough to mount the energy and the commitment to overcome the addiction. Until you find something bigger than your addiction, you're not likely to ever get out of the addiction. That's the secret. Your love's got to be bigger than your love for the addiction, the addictive substance. I just addressed common threads, sex and violence loving, lack of love of self, and looking to fill the holes in themselves with substance, and needing love that is safe. Is overcoming addiction just sheer willpower or desire? No, it's love. Love is a code, it is not a word. L stands for life, and you have to have the desire to live to keep breathing. O stands for zero, unconditional love, and VE stands for volt, electron, negative charge, will. To the degree that we desire, we will. If we desire an addiction, we will an addiction. And to the degree that you desire something greater than your addiction, then your addiction becomes secondary and that thing becomes primary, and that's how will and desire work. Will and desire make the world go round, and will and desire are the driving force behind sex and violence loving, conditional loving, and empathetic and compassionate loving. Someone has to have the desire to use their wisdom to be empathetic and compassionate, and to the degree that they desire to be that for somebody else, their will manifests too. Next question is from Brenda. Why is emotion and weight gain attached? I've been in a Czech program for 3 months. I'm following the program correctly. The first month I lost 20 pounds, but have not lost weight in the past month. Well, that could be a lot of things. Emotion and weight gain are attached because typically the reason a lot of people gain weight, aside from just ignorance as to how to take care of a human body, which is behind a huge percentage of obesity, the reason people often gain weight is because they've had a mental, emotional, or sexual trauma or a conflict of self that has led them to want to avoid getting attention. A lot of women that are overweight were sexually abused as children or physically abused or had problems with young men only being interested in them as sexual objects and not being interested in them for their mind or their humanity. So some women use body fat as a cloaking mechanism to screen out men who are really interested in who they are, not just their tits or their ass. So the emotional component directly related to the motives of why you are overweight, and typically what you'll see is that in people that are overweight or have an eating disorder, their hormonal system is as out of balance as their body is, and whenever your hormones are out of balance, your emotions are out of balance because hormones are the molecule that converts thought into emotion in the body. If you did not have hormones, you simply would not even know you were thinking. You'd be just like a garden hose that didn't know water was running through it. So to the degree that your physiology is imbalanced, your hormones are imbalanced. And don't rush your weight loss program. Remember, the check program is a lifestyle. It's not a quick fix. Take your time. Enjoy the whole process. She goes on to say, I've always had addiction to food, cigarettes, partying, etc., always one at a time. Why is that? Well, like I've said, you're trying to find safe love more than likely. And the fact that you say you've always had one tells me that you've always been looking for a way to be loved without it being traumatic and in a way that you can control the relationship. When people need safe love, they seek love from substances or things that don't talk back and don't expect things. So you get people that are addicted to driving fancy cars. You get runners that are addicted to running, bikers addicted to biking, men addicted to controlling women and children, women addicted to nagging their men and telling them what's wrong with them, and the show goes on. But almost always, those are people who are afraid to be present with themselves, and so they need to find company safely. Tony writes, specifically in the area of addiction, interested in what actions I can take to avoid cocaine relapse. Also, info addressing the best strategies to quit tobacco. Thank you in advance. Well, I'll help you a little bit here. The way you avoid a cocaine relapse is try to find something that you love more than cocaine. My advice to you would be to do some research on the internet, find a real shaman to take you through a shamanic exploration using ayahuasca or another entheogen. Entheogens are God molecules, so they're plants that induce God consciousness, of which there are many, and the shaman knows how to use them. And you're going to find that your cocaine is probably really quite a shitty experience compared to what a shaman can do with you under the right circumstances. And the shaman, if he's a real shaman, will be working to bring you back into your center so that you have body, mind, and soul alignment, at which point addictions are no longer wanted or necessary. When it comes to tobacco, I'll give you some real help. First, stop smoking commercial cigarettes because they're 8% of a commercial cigarette on average is sugar, which is highly addictive, so you're probably as addicted to the sugar as you are the cigarette. Second, they're loaded with pesticides and other farming chemicals, which are extremely addictive by themselves, but when you smoke a cigarette, get multiple pesticides mixed together, and it produces new combinations that are extremely toxic to the body. So your liver produces enzymes to detoxify the body, and when you, if every time you try to stop smoking, the liver actually goes looking for the cigarette again because it spent so many vital resources to make the enzymes. So it typically takes about 14 to 21 days to get the liver to stop producing enzymes, which triggers the brain to crave the substance that's killing it, paradoxically. The other thing is switch to organic or unprocessed types of tobacco. I would get yourself a vaporizer from a smoke shop. Do not light, don't light the tobacco fire. That's very, very dangerous because it produces carcinogens, releases huge amounts of tar and nicotine into your system, and not only clogs your body up, but poisons it. If you get a vaporizer, the top of the line vaporizer is called a Volcano. It only goes to about 450 degrees, so what it does is it's actually a food dehydrator, and it evaporates the moisture out of the plant, which is where the life force of the plant is, so you get a very, very beautiful tobacco experience, but in my estimation, it's about 70% less likely to addict you. So, one, go organic. Two, stop lighting the stuff on fire and use a vaporizing system, of which there are many cost affordable at any smoke shop. If you don't drink coffee already, I'll give you a little tobacco quitting trick. Go find an espresso shop with some organic espresso, and if you're normally, say, smoking two cigarettes in the morning, start first out of espresso, ideally with a little bit of butter in it to give you some fat to tie the caffeine up. If you bring some unsalted butter to the coffee shop with you, warm up, you can drop about a tablespoon of butter into a good shot of espresso. Have that, it'll give you quite a wind up, and you'll find that you won't be able to handle near as much tobacco or nicotine because the system will be so stimulated. So use that as an opportunity to cut back the cigarette. Now you can only do this for so long before you're addicted to caffeine, but the reality of it is caffeine is far easier to get off than cigarettes. So if you use a vaporizer, you use organic tobacco, and you use another form of stimulation, you can basically trade a lesser evil for a greater evil. And then if you follow the program I've outlined here, you'll find motive to wean yourself off of ultimate eventually. Okay. Anna, I don't know how to break the cycle of sugar. Help. No, it's an addiction. Okay, first and foremost, if you're addicted to sugar, just go cold turkey unless you just want to be, you know, the hardest person in the world to be around for a while. The secret of getting off of sugar is to replace it with sugar that is also nutrition. So instead of eating table sugar or things that are full of processed sugar, replace that with fruit or anything that has real nutrition in it, such as unprocessed honey. If you get wild honey, then like Manuka or New Zealand honey or any local honeys, use sweet stuff that has real nutrition in it. The other thing you can help is used for help is stevia, S-T-E-V-I-A. Stevia actually does not raise your blood sugar at all. It actually helps support the adrenal glands, yet it's 1,000 times sweeter than sugar by weight. So you can give yourself that same sense of sweetness, but without the trauma. The other thing you can do is get Yakon syrup. If you go to North American Herb and Spice, you can find their website on the internet. They're a company of the North American Herb and Spice. You can buy their Yakon syrup, which has a glycemic index of 0, but tastes very sweet. And you could be using that as a sugar replacement, and it'll balance your blood sugar out, and you'll get the joy and the psychological effects of the sweet, but you won't get the trauma of the chemical of processed sugar. And Yakon syrup's full of nutrition as well. As you become more and more capable of enduring the withdrawal symptoms of the sugar, which will be far lessened by eating natural sugar, you'll find it easier and easier to wean the sugar off. I would highly recommend studying my book, How to Live and Be Healthy, and following that plan. I'm going to answer one more. This is from John. One of my clients seems to use food and smoking as his way of controlling life. He doesn't necessarily want to make the decisions, but he does it because he can. I find it hard to wrap my head around that. Any thoughts? Yes, everything I've just said. So, really what you're dealing with is somebody who is getting love safely. And as I said, sex and violence lovers and oftentimes conditional lovers really love things like cigarettes and booze because they don't have to deal with or torture. So you're probably dealing with a person who's learned to love himself this way without him knowing it. Getting off of these substances scares the hell out of him because it's kind of like going through a divorce, literally. When people are expressing love to themselves through addictions, they will have identical response emotionally that most of us would have if we went through a divorce. So you don't understand if he's just not ready to go through a divorce yet because he hasn't found something sweeter or better. Okay? Here's one last one I should probably answer from Russ. Paul, what steps should I take to get a 17-year-old who is addicted to perks to take a holistic approach and steer away from Larzepam, Advan, etc., that her doctor currently has her on? I know her parents want the best for her, but only want to trust the physician. Thanks in advance. Again, this program is designed to get to the root of the behavior that led to the use of substance. So the Four Doctors book that comes with the program gives you adequate information to develop a natural source of energy, nutrition, and that is necessary to mount a change. But more importantly, we have to help a young lady like this find out what her dream is. And once you identify the dream, then you focus on achieving the dream. And to the degree that the addiction gets in the way of the dream, it becomes obvious. And the key thing is to find a love bigger than the addiction. Once you do that, the rest is easy. It'll pretty much take care of itself. All right. James, would you like to make any announcements before we close the call?
Well, sure. I mean, those are some tough questions, and it's too bad we're out of time, but I think everyone on the line with us has really gotten a great taste of what the 1-2-3-4 system is like and the kind of coaching they will receive as part of that.
So what I'm willing to do, James, is if I can find a little time before I head to England on Monday, I will record the answers to as many of these questions as I can and then forward them to you, and you can post them.
Fantastic. That's a great idea.
So I got 7 of them done, I think, here.
Awesome. Yep, yeah. And there were some other really good questions.
I'm number 7 now out of, you know, like 20 or whatever it was.
Yeah,
20.
There's actually 35, so.
Yeah, 35. So I'll go through, and because the answers are commonly, you'll see that the same answers occur because people don't realize what I've already said, you see, so it won't take that long, but I'm really interested in supporting people who feel stuck out there.
Of course. That's a great idea, and we will, of course, post that as quickly as we can, and we do have everybody's email address so we can email everybody and let them know when those have been posted and where they are on our site, too.
Great.
So I'll just remind everybody that they can visit the site at www.ppssuccess.com to learn about the program. If you go to the homepage, you'll see a banner right at the top of the page for the 1-2-3-4 virtual workshop. And you just click on that banner and it'll take you right to a page that explains everything about that workshop. And it also has the recording from the last 1-2-3-4 call that we had, so you can listen to those questions and answers too. So there's a lot of good information there. And of course, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback about the program or the call, you can send them to me, James, at Dean, D-E-A-N, at ppssuccess.com. And that's it.
Well, thank you, James, and thank you, everybody, for participating today. I certainly enjoyed sharing as much of the knowledge as I could pass on to you tonight, and I think you'll find the program very, very clear, very complete, and very rewarding. At least that's my dream. So I'd love feedback from any of you that go through the process, so feel free to send us an email through the PPS website, and feel free to join in our upcoming free call for the open house at PPS. And if you didn't realize it, I am opening all the lessons for free for 3 days starting on the 17th, which is coming right
tomorrow.
Up here tomorrow.
That's right.
The PPS lessons will be available free of charge for 3 days. You can look at all the slideshows and listen to the audios and take lectures on any of the lessons you'd like. And if that gets your appetite going for more, then you can join the program right there. And I'll give a free 72-minute coaching call this Sunday. And it's all posted on the website.
That's right. And there's a banner for that on the homepage too. So if you head to the homepage and you want to find out more about the open house, you can just go there and click on it.
Have a great evening, everybody, wherever you are, and thank you for having an interest in your own well-being and that of humanity and the planet.
Great.
Thanks,
Paul. Bye. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thanks, Paul. Good night.
See you guys.